Welcome to the People in Emerging Tech podcast. In today's episode, we'll be taking a look at regulatory policies surrounding blockchain and the advent of Web3. Please listen as panelists at the TechPoint Africa Blockchain Summit discuss Web3 and regulation, finding the meeting point.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. My name is Emmanuel Paul, and yes, last year I was on this stage and I was talking about crypto and the future. So since then, I've become an even bigger skeptic of Web3. I'm sorry. And that is not because all the coins I have are bleeding currently. Totally not. And I'm not going to say anything further on that matter. So, yes, but when it comes to Web3 and cryptocurrencies, there are lots and lots of conversations to have. But when I saw the topic for this session, Web3 and regulations, finding the meeting point, we all know that regulations always catch up with innovations, right? But with Web3, it feels like they're on both extreme ends of the Atlantic. They are not close at all. So, but we're going to try, and there are so many possibilities that was running through my head. When it comes to NFTs, you're talking things about IP rights. When it comes to DAOs, you're talking about our entire political system as we know it. When it comes to exchanges, we're talking about capital markets. So there are several possibilities, but I'm going to leave the conversations to people who are smarter than me to come and talk about it today. So join me as we invite every distinguished people on stage to come and talk about Web3 and regulations. And coincidentally, the SEC, Nigeria Securities and Exchange Commission, just released a whole bunch of regulations for cryptocurrency exchanges, not just exchanges, the whole crypto market. So we're going to be talking about that and a lot of other things. So yeah, join me as we welcome Buki Ogunsaki, Principal and Head Sasochi of BBO Solicitors. Thank you very much for joining us today. Then we have Chimezie Chuta, founder and coordinator of the Blockchain Nigerian User Group. Please give him a round of applause. Welcome. Then we have Senator Ihenyin, president of CBAN and lead partner at Infusion Lawyers. Yeah, thank you very much, Chimezie Chuta and Senator and Buki. Thank you so much for having us here. So we're going to be talking about, first things, we're going to be talking about the SEC regulations. What is the deal with that? And it's a very, very long document, but for the sake of this audience, what do you think are the most important things we should focus on in this newly released regulation? Mr. Chimezie, please help us with that.
Okay. Thank you so much, Emmanuel, and thanks to TechPoint for organizing this event. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for also making our time to be here today, because the conversation will be very, very, very enriching to the knowledge that you need to weather the storm that is coming in the bear market, especially. All right, so the SEC guidelines for regulating virtual financial assets and the operators in the space released about a week ago directly points to areas that are important to them, because you have to understand that SEC's role is as it regards the capital market in Nigeria. SEC Nigeria is under the Nigerian Capital Market Committee that is given the power to manage everything that happens in the capital market. So when they make rules or regulations that touch crypto and blockchain, it's as it relates to their oversight environment. And what is their main concern? They want to have investors' confidence and protection. Okay. Secondly, they want to encourage a balanced market environment where there will not be any single dominating parties, and among other things. So those are the things that they are really concerned about. They are not interested in the technology at all, and they've made that fact very clear. And in doing that, they have tried to make some rules that will guard people who want to deploy services in the crypto space as maybe custodial service providers for crypto assets, or people who want to launch a new token, because that will involve you getting fundings from the capital market or from the public. And thirdly, they want also control those who want to run digital asset exchanges, where some of these digital assets will be exchanged. And they want to make sure that people are protected when they use them. So in fairness to them, regulating the way they want to regulate is not really bad, but our concern is that they have not looked at the broader perspective and thought of how they can encourage local innovation, because directly the amounts of money that will be that have been stipulated for exchange operators directly excludes local participants who may not be able to come up with that amount of money. Okay, and of course, in our efforts to help them, when we got those drafts, we made inputs and we made suggestions that, of course, they ignored. All right,
Buki, you talked about the broader picture and the regulatory environment. So, from a legal standpoint, do you think this was a necessary thing to happen at this point?
You're putting me on the spot, but then. So, regarding the broader picture, definitely SEC coming out with the regulations or rules is very key to the acceptance of crypto in Nigeria. So, and it's very important, because before there is mass adoption, there needs to be regulation. Because with any emerging tech, we have what we call incoherence, where people don't understand the market, people are fearful of the market, and then we have bad players in the market as well. And just like you were even alluding to before we began about you not wanting to say anything about Web 3.0, people are afraid. And in order to allay the fears, SEC needs to come out with regulation to guide all the parties in the market, especially regarding bad actors, and like Chuta said, to prevent exploitation in the market and protect investors and players in the market as well. So very, very important for them to have come out with the rules. Now, regarding the rules themselves, ABI itself, I will support what Chuta said, that it's necessary. We must understand where SEC is coming from. But then again, SEC also needs to consider that this is a new technology. And considering the uniqueness of the tech, they need to consider that with the rules. And that's where we find there's not much coherence in both. Also, you have to consider that with new tech will come local innovation. And it's an opportunity for Nigeria and Africa to leapfrog. So why hinder that in some respect, if you understand what I mean? So those are the areas, the gray areas that we have regarding the rules. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So, Senator, do you think the SEC rules are progressive or restricting?
Well, against the background of SEC statutory duty to ensure a fair transparent and open market for players, consumer protection and investment safety comes in. Against that background, the SEC has come up with these rules. Is it progressive? Is it otherwise? It's a progressive rule. It's pretty progressive. Let's not forget that before now, there has been no official recognition of virtual asset service providers in this country. not a single entity of the government has taken a step, such as the step taken by the SEC, to say that we now officially recognize a sector called the virtual asset sector. That is key. Secondly, it is the first time ever that a government entity is recognizing players in this space. No one before now has said the exchanges are players in the Nigerian economy. For the first time, we have a rule saying that there is what you call digital asset exchanges, DAX. One side. For the first time, we have a rule saying we now recognize digital asset custodians. So if you're going to be keeping anyone's digital assets, storing, maintaining it in any way, for the first time, we're recognizing you as a player in this sector. Thirdly, it is the first time that we have a rule recognizing the initial coin offering. This is the first time. No African country, perhaps maybe except Mauritius, has actually recognized initial coin offering in its capital markets. That means that for the first time, businesses can raise capital through digital assets, relying on these crowdfunding schemes called initial coin offering. So you imagine the SEC going through a white paper. That is the first time. It's unprecedented. And then last but not the least, for the first time, the SEC is saying that if you play in the digital asset space in Nigeria, you will come under what is called virtual asset service provider for the first time. And we have a registration system for that purpose. So yes, this is beautifully progressive.
Okay, thank you very much. So I know you were going to head somewhere, but I wanted someone else to address what you were probably about to address. So, it says this is progressive, right? And two provisions in this new stood out to me. Number one, 500 million paid up capital, minimum. Now, we're in an era where we say people should stop thinking about holding ATH, all-time high, all-time lows, and all of that. Let's start building with crypto. Now, the minimum paid off capital of an exchange is 500 million. And there's a tricky provision, which I hope we'll get clarity there. An exchange CEO cannot stay more than 10 years in office. So what is your take from an industry, as an industry player?
Okay, so I agree with Senator. It's quite progressive, in the sense that they are actually recognizing the crypto industry, right? So this is the first time, and this is like first step to like recognition and acceptance that there's a crypto industry and we are willing to play there, right? So it's progressive in that sense. But as to like the regulations and the rules themselves, I feel like there's still a long way to go. Like, this is only the first draft, right? There's a lot of opportunities for improvement and things to like get better. And I feel like there's also room for like the cryptocurrency community as well to contribute to these rules and regulations and say like, this is how we want to be governed. This is what's working in the globe and this is what we believe would work for us. With regards the 500 million cap, I feel like, yes, it raises like the barrier of entry and it makes it really difficult for new players to enter. But I just hope that these are some of the things that they look to refine as they go forward when we come up with the regulations.
Okay, thank you very much. So now I think a pressing question that is probably on everybody's mind too is in February 5, 2021, the CBN released a circular prohibiting financial institutions from engaging in any cryptocurrency transaction, and that has caused a lot of heat in the crypto space for the past 1 year. So I guess the question on everybody's mind is how can the SEC regulations exist alongside the CBN's hostile stance? So I guess anyone can take this.
So, okay. I feel at this current point in time, right, what we have is an intention to like put some regulations in place. So the regulations are not yet in place, right? And then SEC has also like come out to say that their policies are not conflicting with CBN in any way at this point in time. So currently we're all like on the same page and we're all still like working towards like getting these regulations in place. And I feel like one of the things that we should understand is the CBN's policy is kind of like was the first like announcement or the first recognition that, okay, cryptocurrency trading is going on, these things are happening in society. The first approach of every government, before they understand it, is to say, look, be careful, which is what the CBN has done, right? Now, the SEC has gone to do some research. They've come up with rules and all of these things. I believe that over a period of time, while they refine these rules and they get better, the CBN should be able to adopt these regulations in guiding like the cryptocurrency or digital assets, right?
Okay.
I was going to add that the rules by SEC will probably give CBN more insight because they probably were not sure how to go about it with capital markets and accounting information and payments. But the rules now will give them more insight. So it's kind of like, I don't want to use the word forcing their hand, but at this point, CBN will need to come up with a policy on how banks can work with crypto transactions. And if you go through the rules, in the rules, it does state that the payments are to be made via a registered bank account. So that, you know, automatically brings CBN in, because if you are making the payments, then where are you making the payments to? You will need to make the payments into a registered account. And in order for you to have a registered account, you need to have it not illegal, or at least allowed for you to register and get an account. So CBN, I believe, has some homework to do. I'm sure they've already been working behind the scenes anyway, but at least this gives them the push to come out with something, you know, different. Thank you.
Yeah, in addition to that, on a very broad engagement, interagency engagement, comprising the Central Bank, the SEC Nigeria, NIDA, and NFIU, okay, there is an understanding that once a virtual asset provider company initiates an intention to register, okay, then that expression of interest qualifies them to operate a bank account. And if it were a company that whose account was previously restricted, that expression of interest also will enable that company to have the account unlocked, and they can begin the process. So we have to understand that this journey of regulation didn't start today. It's far back as 2018, and SEC had been at the forefront of making sure that these things are dealt with. You know, and where we are right now, like Senator has said, he has brought legitimacy to the industry. Secondly, we have gone away from the ghost mode that the industry was previously, because CBN refused to listen to industry players and organizations because they think we don't exist. We're invisible. But now SEC has made us visible and validated our presence in the space, and that's a good thing. And through the NFIU, I believe that CBN will have all the data that they need, all the information that used to scare them. Those data will be available to them, and I think we'll be resolving some of these issues in no distant time.
Yes, I would just like to add that we can't speculate, but if we follow what the CBN has expressly said when it introduced that restriction about 15 months ago, four things. One, crypto can be used for money laundering and terrorism financing. One. Two, crypto can be used for investment scams. Three, crypto can be used for fraudulent transactions. That's outside money laundering. And four, terrorism financing. Like Chimezie has said, it's easy to see these as very compelling reasons why you should restrict crypto transactions in Nigerian financial and banking services if people transacting in these are seen as ghosts. But now, in terms of crypto being used for investment scams, it is the Securities and Exchange Commission that has the statutory role under the Investment and Securities Act 2007 to ensure that anything scam in the investment space is taken care of. Thankfully, we now have the SEC rules. We didn't have this 15 months ago. So on that score, the CBN is bound to actually review its stand as far as crypto being used for investment scams is concerned. This is not anyone doing anyone a favor. It's a duty. The second part, crypto being used for money laundering and financing terrorism. If anyone has been following the reports by the EFCC chairman himself, it's published, it's online, anyone can Google it. He said very point blankly that because cryptocurrencies are not regulated in a country, and because players in that space don't have any regulation by SEC and all of them, it is very difficult for them to invest issues around criminal transactions and all that. In other words, our law enforcement agencies have been in the dark because the CBN has a restriction. In other words, there was no KYC and all that, as CBN was saying. That has changed now, because if we look very closely at the rules, every player that is registered under SEC is now forced to also have AML KYC compliance. So that has been taken care of as well. So the CBN has to sit down on that score and review that. Lastly, on fraud and terrorism financing and all that, the Financial Action Task Force, a task force, FATF, has already evaluated this sector objectively and has said that we need regulation for virtual asset sector so that virtual assets will not be used to facilitate money laundering and financing terrorism. And we have been in the conversation, BNUG, CBAN, all of us, along with NFIU, SEC, saying that Nigeria now needs to ensure that there is more transparency in that space. That opacity, right, that the governor of the central bank was talking about before the Senate House of Assembly, the Senate and the House of Assembly, will now disappear because there is now going to be transparency because people will now register. Now, CBN is also bound to look at that area again and review its stand. We believe and we know that we are all on the same page when it comes to a sound, safe financial system. There is no financial system that will be sound and safe when you keep virtual sector in the dark. Now we're in the light, we can get it right.
All right, thank you very much. Yes, so I think the key takeaway there is whatever the CBN stance was 15 months ago, something has to change now, very, very definitely. So I think for those of us here, I think your questions are even more important than my own. So if you have any question right now about the SEC regulations, because the other part of the conversation is probably futuristic, probably premature, or maybe not premature, but if you have any questions surrounding the whole SEC regulations and how it applies to whatever you do in the crypto space, please, can I see your hands?
My name is Kainde Adeleke. So I feel regulation feels like we're threaded on thin ice, right? And personally, I don't agree with the SEC regulation at all, because I don't think it's possible for the current establishment to approve of something that would upend their control. It doesn't seem realistic to me, because like if you think of traditional finance and all of the things our central bank is involved with, like we know the current state of our economy, it's visible for everybody to see. So it doesn't seem feasible and people are not talking about that. It's not feasible for them to want to approve of a decentralized structure where they don't have control of. Like, I've personally had to think about that. So how do we have that conversation where we know that there is no way, you know, the current establishment is going to approve of this? Like, even for the ICO of Ethereum that started in 2017, they had to find loopholes to make sure that ICOs are not seen as securities, because securities can be regulated and stuff. So how do we have that conversation, right? And I'm mostly pointing some of my questions to, sorry, I forgot your name, sir.
Senator.
Yeah, to Senator, because you mentioned money laundering and, you know, terrorism and stuff. But then even before the advent of decentralized structures, right, KYC attached accounts were also used to fund terrorism and money laundering and fraud. So, and all of that hasn't been solved. So it just seems like an excuse to blame all of those on decentralized structure, because we know that, you know, if we allow all of this to come, you know, we wouldn't be able to retain our power. So I think we should start to address that, or how do we come to have that conversation? So that's my question. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. I agree with you that when it comes to the decentralized space, which is what blockchain is essentially about, decentralization and a permissionless community where transactions can happen. I can be a lender, I can be a banker, I can be a borrower, I can be an insurer, including the insured, with this technology without needing any license. Now, that said, I also know that because this is the first step by the SEC, probably they have taken a very conservative stand. If anyone has noticed, the SEC has tried as much as possible to avoid focusing on the technology and focusing on the players instead. That's what the SEC rules have done. So it's not really interested in what the technology has done, nothing at all. It didn't look at the features of the technology, decentralization, transparency, traceability, and all that stuff we talk about crypto. They are just interested in the players. If you are a player that offers services around crypto or digital assets, you are expected to get a license. I think that is an important first step anyway, so that they know the players. For lawyers in the house, lawyers usually like to focus on the acts of parties rather than the technology. Because if we keep focusing on technology, actually, technology will keep changing. Today it's blockchain technology. Who knows? Some people are already talking about a technology that will wipe out blockchain in less than 5 years from now, whether true or false. So do we need the SEC to keep changing the rules when technology change? So we need to focus on the actors, actually. Where I give it to players in the space when it comes to decentralization, all that rule, I've also reviewed it, and it doesn't make any effort at all at trying to understand how the decentralized space work. So for instance, we talk about initial DEX offering. The rules is completely quiet about that. And I don't know how is that going to happen. Because ICOs actually practically died after a very suicidal outing in 2017. People are talking more about IDOs now. The rules are completely, quiet about that. Coming to the KYC and all that money laundering issue, I didn't say so. It was the CBN that said so. And I think they have a point. Now, let's not get it twisted. In 2017, the same CBN issued a statement telling all of the financial institutions, including the banks, that be very careful about guys from the crypto space. But if you must deal with them, ensure that you apply KYC, AML, CFT. That was very sound. And that is what I expect the CBN will also go back to, rather than this shut it all down approach. So KYC is forever important. I don't know about decentralized space. If if you're running a decentralized product, right, no one is probably going to expect you to come for a license because there's no company, there's no entity, it's all smart contracts. I agree that all that was, there's a big gap in the rules. But again, let's see what happens. This is the first step by the SEC, and this is where the engagements come in. I'm the president of CBAN, and I also am secretary in some other entities where operators in the space are. And there have been general complaints about the lack of engagements. They believe predominantly that they were not engaged when these things were going on. Perhaps if that engagement had happened, most of the stuff that operators are now reacting to could have been probably avoided. Thank you.
Okay, let me just add something to that. Yes, the technology regulation is not sex job, and we have a completely different regulatory agency that is focused on that, and that's NIDA, National Agency for Technology Development. And as far back as 2019, we've had begun working on a national blockchain adoption strategy document, which primarily will, you know, define certain policies that will guide people who want to deploy decentralized protocols. Okay, and it's regulatable. Okay, there is nothing about it that is difficult, like that you cannot regulate. That you have servers or nodes scattered in different regions of the world doesn't mean that those nodes doesn't translate into footprints in physical locations somewhere. So it's regulatable. The technology can be regulated. Okay, so I can tell you that without missing word about that. And when that policy document comes out, it will clearly define how people and startups and businesses that want to deploy decentralized applications, or you want to deploy a decentralized protocol, it goes around. Now, whether or not, because you have to understand that there are open blockchains and also there are, you know, blockchains that are private. Open blockchains, yes, is difficult for you to like regulate the technology of open blockchains. But you're going to find that as we progress in this technology, we're going to see a much more use of centralized blockchain technologies by entities that want to deploy solutions, and they will be regulated. You don't want Nigerian Stock Exchange to deploy their exchange on the Bitcoin network, or you don't want any of the government entities to like put everything. It's not everything that should be on the public blockchain. In fact, for the sake of security, you don't use public blockchains for critical kinds of data that you don't want people to have access to openly like that. And there'll be a whole lot of people who will come into the space, and those are the kind of technology they will use. CBDCs are going to be running on private blockchains. Most of the supply chain platforms that we're going to be using will be running on private blockchains. Most medical platforms, they will be on private blockchains. So many of these infrastructure, when we enter the mass adoption era, you will now see and understand what I'm trying to explain, that it's not going to be open, decentralized protocols all the way. The mass adoption will utilize private networks and private blockchains.
Hmm. Yeah, so right. I wanted to add that in line with what Senator and Chuta have said, in the rules by SEC, we find that there is a section that actually asks the DAOPs, the digital asset offering platforms, to submit documentation on their tech. So they need to submit source codes, they need to submit flowcharts on how their tech works, okay? And so SEC is going to be going through many of these documents and finding out how they're operating. So it's part of the requirement to register right now under SEC. And I believe that this will cause SEC to further understand the players, the tech, and to also, within its own organization, follow through with revolution, because SEC won't be able to remain the way SEC is. They will need to come up with new systems within the organization to be able to, like Chuta said, to be able to regulate these centralized systems. Because we will see from, I'm sure they will see from the documentation that many of them actually have mixed blockchains. Some of them are hybrid, some of them do part of their tech off-chain and on-chain. So they're going to be, you know, studying all of this and then now using that to help them further revise the rules.
All right. So do we have an industry player here? Do you completely agree with what...
I believe Chuta was right on the money. Like, with more adoption, you have more central exchanges, which are kind of like the private bodies. And no government or like no country really want to leave their central bank digital currency on the block. Like, they want to have it on the centralized exchange because they want to have policies around it to control like the usage and the regulation. And I also think that that's something that they could, SEC could really like explore more when they want to like regulate digital currency, because that's really like the gateway. You have to find like a bridge where you marry the decentralized economy to the centralized economy. This is where like you exchange fiat for crypto or whatever it is. And by regulating like your CBDC or like your stable coins, you can basically like kind of like regulate the entire market.
Okay, so I think that brings a question to my head. Isn't the entire concept of decentralization not having a central authority? So if we're not having a central authority to regulate...
Okay, so let me say this. Everybody is always asking that question, right? But I believe that it's going to go both ways. So we're going to see many systems become more centralized, and then we're going to see the decentralized systems create their own governance structures, right? I think it's going to go both ways, but you know, it's debatable. It's debatable at the least. So the reason why I say this is because I belong to an organization where I do research work, where for NFTs, although we haven't gotten there yet, but it's just an example, where for NFTs, you really do not need to go to the physical courts to get your matter resolved. We have systems that are on the blockchain that are decentralized justice, where you have judges, you have jurors, you have matters that are heard and they are resolved on the blockchain. Now, this system is working independently of our physical courts on this hand. So that's why I believe that it will go both ways. But at the point of mass adoption and interoperability, many who are fearful will find themselves playing in the centralized space more as opposed to decentralized.
Okay.
You know, the argument of decentralization and centralization has no end. Okay, so if you look at the Bitcoin network, depending on where you want to look at it from, some people say it is not really decentralized. And we know that it is the most decentralized protocol out there. That is an example for us to like point at. I've had people argue a couple of months ago before the crackdown on the Chinese miners, and they claim that majority of the mining product platforms are all positioned in China as of then, and that means that China controls Bitcoin. Therefore, it is not really decentralized. But you see, it's an argument can go on and on and on. They talk about Ethereum, the same thing. They talk about other newer blockchains like Solana, like Binance Smart Chain, and all that. See, without playing around the nomenclature itself, what is important is to understand the ingredient of decentralization, which is that there must be consensus before records are added to the block. And that is key. So whether it is being
done by entities that know themselves, or entities that don't know themselves, or entities that are located in far distant places, or entities that are within a particular geographical location. The most important thing to note is that without consensus, nothing happens. And that's what you should really be focusing on, not the argument of decentralization, which will never, can never convince anybody here about that. And you can also convince me too, all right? So that's just for that.
Okay, thank you, Chimezie. And I actually understand this perspective, but I think for us to really do justice to this whole issue of centralization, we need a whole event just to talk about it. Or we just do a podcast and trash it out for like 2 hours, just trashing every different dimensions to this conversation. So, is that second person who wanted to ask a question?
All right, thank you very much. My name is Tim Tokoya Akintade from TechNest. You already mentioned what I wanted to say. Okay, apart from the fact that we have two government parastatals having contradictory stance in crypto, just last month, CBN sanctioned 5 banks for engaging in crypto transactions, and this month SEC is coming with regulation. Okay, apart from that, regulation, KYC and the likes, and decentralization shouldn't come in the same sentence. They are mutually exclusive. If you are going to be doing regulation and the likes, you are going to be going against the core essence of the blockchain technology. That's what I want to say. Thank you.
No, okay, let's okay, yes, that was a very, very valid point, and I actually don't have anything to say. So yeah, this argument will not end. Say you guys will just come and let's do a podcast, 1-2 hours, let's talk about this thing, if you have the ears, so you listen. So, yes, you wanted to ask a question?
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Fisayo. For my background, I most recently just completed my program with the MIT in blockchain and disruptive technologies. I want to address my question to Buki. I work with the executive leadership of a company that wants to, let's say, venture into blockchain and different applications. Does the regulation we have in place qualify as sufficient for a company to actually go by and decide that, yes, we want to develop like a blockchain project and go live to serve potential customers? How will payments happen considering the banking side of it? If we raise a token, how is that all going to happen? Are the regulators going to come for us? You know, we are discussing and smiling in this conference, but if they are suing us, I don't know if you're going to be there, but help us. Is the regulation sufficient, or should organizations actually calm down, study, or should they be developing and waiting for CBN to hopefully sometime come around?
Okay, thank you for your question. I think, like we've established here, the regulation is a first step, right, in recognizing the parties. But I don't think it covers everything. I don't think so. Personally, and from my research, I believe that there are different aspects to crypto. Chuta mentioned earlier that NIDDA should be in charge of the infrastructure and the tech, right? And then SEC will handle the securities, making sure that investors are safe and that consumers are safe in whatever they decide to invest in. I also believe that CBN needs to come out with their rules for payments and cryptocurrencies, because that's under their umbrella. Then I also believe that there's another aspect of assets, which is the art, music, collectibles, and all of that. And I believe that at a point in time, the Broadcasting Commission or Copyright Commission will need to come in at some point for those kind of assets. So I believe that regulation should be divided into and classified according to use cases. So depending on the use case of the asset or the crypto, then we now know which regulatory agency should be in charge of that particular aspect. Having said that, I believe that for now, every virtual asset service provider should be looking at the rules. They should be speaking to legal organizations and getting the requirements that SEC has asked for. So the legal opinions, the white papers, the forms, everything they should be looking at, you know, gathering all of that together. If they don't have the funds, well, they can at least still get themselves ready for that particular point. And I believe that they should also engage SEC as well. Virtual asset providers should engage them, find out what you should be doing, what you need to be looking at. If you don't have all the requirements, what are the options for us? You know, I think they need to be having those conversations. And I believe that as time goes on, this is definitely not a sprint. This is the only the beginning of the very, very long journey in the regulatory aspects of, for crypto assets. So I don't think any organization should throw in the towel and be like, well, we don't have 500 million or we don't have 30 million, so then what? But just engage, keep networking in the environment, get your legal teams in place, get all the other, there are so many requirements under those rules. We have risk management, we have governance structures, so many. So there's a lot of work to be done. They can be doing all of those meanwhile. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Buki.
I want to just add something to that too, because you see, SEC rules does not mean that the position of blockchain technology in Nigeria, so to speak, has changed. Do you understand? No, no. In terms of, let's say your company or the company you represent wants to launch a product that will have an interaction with the Nigerian capital market, you're going to be deploying something that will involve people coming to your platform either to deposit money or exchange money or do some kind of receiving money from the public. That's when you have business with the SEC. Do you understand me? So if you are launching a product, a project, that it hasn't anything to do with any of those ones, because you can actually create a blockchain technology solution without issuing an ICO offering for your token. It may even not even go ahead to even issue a token. You can have some kind of internal mechanism that you can use in managing your governance within your application without saying, this is our token, we want to list it on an exchange. Do you understand? And secondly, you know, if you're registering a company at CAC and you put blockchain or you put crypto, they will still say expunge. Blockchain technology and crypto is not recognized by Nigeria. They will still tell you that. What is going to change that is actually a national blockchain policy that will make it clear to all the government entities and personnel, this is what our policy is. This is our stand. This is what we are saying that this technology is. From then moving forward, then you will now have freedom to like use those nomenclature in your CAC. And that responsibility lies squarely with the National Agency for Technology Development. And from inside scoop that is available, we know that it's nearing the point where it's going to get a presidential assent. Okay, so it's just processes. And when that assent is gotten, then typically regulations should come after policies. All right, but SEC has to do this because the technology has already begun to involve people doing a whole lot of things. The train has already left the station itself, so that's why they have to bring the regulation.
All right.
So the U.S. has this debate classifying digital assets, either as assets or securities, or there's this debate, right? The SEC in the U.S. thinks it's a security. Some other government parastatal in the U.S. thinks it's an asset. So my question is, what is the lowest hanging fruit, right? Speaking to blockchain, I'm not talking about cryptocurrencies in particular. Speaking to blockchain generally, What do you see as the lowest hanging fruit that a company can actually execute using blockchain technology, right? Not speaking to just cryptocurrency or particular, yeah.
Okay, any takers?
All right. It is important to take that talk from Chimizé. What you will need to do in terms of regulation should depend on the nature of projects that you are going into. So to answer that question, what are the low-hanging fruits? It depends on the industry you want to disrupt. So if you're looking at savings and loans, for instance, I saw a project recently that wants to make it easy for people to enjoy savings and loans on the blockchain. You definitely know that the low-hanging fruits there may not even exist, because that is the area where the CBN is seated in the room. So if you're talking about real estate, for instance, you know, those who want to create tokens and then have persons own some kind of part of a property, you are going to an area where even the SEC would be interested in, right? If we're going into NFTs, like Buki was saying, that probably is the lowest hanging fruit right now, because the SEC is not really looking at that space. CBN is not concerned about that space, really, as long as you're not getting into money laundering and terrorism financing through NFTs, which we have seen these days via research. So look across all of the industries you want to, you know, entertainment sector, sports. We have seen English football clubs launch fan tokens, right? That probably is a low-hanging fruit if you're interested in reviving Enyimba and shooting stars. That's probably an area you want to look at. No, so I can't really tell you what you should do. It should depend on what product or service you want to offer. And like Buki has advised, always get the professionals involved. The lawyers should be able to advise what the risks are in terms of regulation and policy. And Chimeze was right on the point. Policy should be the first thing, really, not regulation before policy. But it's quite unfortunate. We haven't had, and I have to say this with all sense of responsibility, we haven't had a government that has a vision for the technology. That's what is lacking. So that what the effect of that is that every entity or regulator will approach the technology from the point of view of its statutory duty. SEC is about consumer protection and investor safety. They will jump in and ensure that we don't care about innovators. CBN will also look at that area from a point of view of banking services and safety. So what we need, and what I think is lacking, is the national vision on blockchain and digital assets. Once we're able to take care of that, I see the different agencies now having a direction, sort of, within the framework or purview of their regulation. In India, for instance, it is the Minister of Finance in the government that is driving regulation for crypto in India. India shares a lot of similarities with Nigeria. So the question is, what is the Minister of Finance doing? What is the Minister of Finance position on blockchain and crypto? As far as I'm concerned, I have not seen a single publication from the Minister of Finance about blockchain and crypto in Nigeria. I'll say this now to round off. There is the talk by the Vice President Osinbajo, Professor Osinbajo, recently, saying to the CBN that there's a role for regulation when it comes to disruptive technologies, including crypto. Now, there's what we call the National Economic Council, which is chaired by the vice president himself. And the CBN is a member of that National Economic Council. So the question we should be asking is how well our policymakers are engaging on the subject. I do not see a lot of engagement in that space. And I give the National Institute for, Information Technology Development Agency, NITDA, a lot of applause for even taking that step towards something that looks like a national policy. But we need political backup in all this conversation, and that is lacking presently.
Okay.
For low-hanging fruit, just like Senator said, it'll be for the U.S., before they are able to determine whether an asset is a security or not, they subject it to the Howey test. And the Howey test is asking four very essential questions about the token or the assets that you are offering. Now, if you pass the Howey test and you are not offering any of those, you're not taking people's money and expecting the value to increase, and there are other questions that you ask yourself, then it's considered not a security. So I would say, prior to going into anything, look up the Howey test, ask yourself the questions prior to launching a product. So for now, the low-hanging fruit is probably NFTs. Even for NFTs with the real estate, if it's a secure, if it qualifies as a security, even though it's real estate, it will probably come under a security token. But if it's not, when it comes to just NFTs or any other token that is offering any utility or service, just like maybe e-commerce, we're trading business to customer or business to business, then those will not, you know, be high priority in the case for securities. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Buki. And I think that leads us to another aspect, NFTs. How many of us have minted an NFT here? Okay. How many of us want to mint NFTs? Oh, okay. Interesting. But how many of you don't understand what NFTs are at all? Okay. There's a breakout section going to address NFTs and what it is and how to go about it. But I guess from a regulatory standpoint, during our podcast a few weeks ago, I mentioned that every grandparent should start hiding their old pictures. So there's a lot of conversations around NFTs, who owns what. And of course, the universal consensus has always been whoever takes the picture is the owner of that picture, whoever took that picture. But now that there's a lot of money involved, people didn't care. They didn't even debate that thing. But now there's a lot of money involved or potential for money, I think we're going to have to resurrect that debate. So, but I guess the overarching question is, how do we think about regulations when it comes to NFTs? Because I see stuff that I don't understand. I honestly don't understand it. So how do we, because you mentioned it as a low-hanging fruit. So
okay, so yeah. For NFTs, right? What is an NFT? An NFT is a digital asset or token, which represents kind of like a digital signature on the blockchain representing ownership of an asset. And this could be in form of art, collectibles, music. It could be anything. It could even be real estate. So now, like we said, we're still in the beginning phases of all these things. It's going to continue to change and revolutionize. But right now, what the stance is that if you want to mint an NFT, first of all, who owns the rights to that image? Right? Are you the one that took the image? Does the image belong to you before you put it on the blockchain? And then if you now ask yourself those questions, because they're copyright issues, they're IP issues. Now, if you now ask yourself those questions and it belongs to you completely, if it doesn't belong to you, that's another matter. If it doesn't belong to you completely, then you need to have an agreement drawn between yourself and whoever owns that particular image before you put it on the blockchain. Now, after putting it on the blockchain, there needs to be an agreement or license that specifies the exact rights that you are selling. Now, are you selling complete rights to that image, or are you holding on to the copyrights of that image, but you are licensing the image? So there are many things that people do not currently consider when they're minting an NFT. And that's why you probably will most likely will need to involve someone, maybe legal, who can help you draft these licenses. And then not just that, when you are minting the NFT, the license or agreement needs to be attached, or a link to the agreement needs to be attached to the image, so that whoever is buying, they are understanding the rights that are coming along with that NFT. Now, having said that, we have a case in the UK which was on Boss Beauties. The UK ruling specified or ruled that an NFT is now regarded as property, right? So it is property. So it can be seized, it can be frozen, it can be, because it's property, because it goes along with the lines of attributes of a property. What's a property? Something that can be transferred, you can sell it, you can give it, you can exclude others' right to it because it now belongs to you, to the exclusion of others. So it is now classified as a property in the UK. And I think many other jurisdictions and regions will follow with this to educate people that it's actually a property. So we need to consider all of these things when prior to minting an NFT. So therefore, you can't just go somewhere, take an image of someone's property, and then put it on the blockchain and say it belongs to you. There's going to be a problem down the line with this. And we have several cases in the US of people having cases in court on this. I know even Jay-Z has an NFT case in court because his producer puts an NFT on the blockchain, and they're duking it out in court to find out who has rights to it and all of that. So it's a lot of tricky aspects, but that's a good basic for you.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. That's a whole lot.
Should I come in?
Yeah, please.
Okay, so in one forum that we had, last year, I said something. I said a lot of people will go to jail because of this NFT thing. Okay, because you know the internet never forgets, and blockchain has even made it to be even like well chained. Yes. You know, so you may mint an NFT now, you're selling and you're enjoying. 5 years from now, the NFT is going to still be there, and the original owner will finally catch up and he'll come and vomit all that money. Okay, so one thing about technology application that young people should understand is that technology is about solving problems. It's not primarily about money making. You understand? You know, you think about the problem you want to solve first, because anywhere in the world, anyone chooses to create value, the market will definitely return rewards to him, which can translate into money. Let me give you an example of a case of someone who utilized NFT for the right purpose. A youth copper somewhere, I think Ibadan or so, met an elderly man that drums. He does, you know, all this Yoruba talking drumming stuff. And he's a very well advanced drummer in that remote place where he was serving. And typically, he's supposed to be really someone who has made money out of his skills, because that's the only thing the man does for life. So you know what this young copper did? He took photographs of this elderly man and recorded some of his drummings and created NFTs for that man. And in the primary market, when he minted and sold, immediately that NFT was bought by someone else for about 1.2 million naira value in ETH. And because he had already told that man, see, this is what I want to do with your NFT. I'm going to, with your image and your performance, I'm going to take you and put you somewhere that you can make some money. And he said that he's going to share it with him 50-50. Gentleman agreement. And the young couple actually cashed out that money and brought live 600,000 naira to this elderly man. And the man said that since he had been living on earth, he has never seen that amount of money together before, talk less about being the owner of that amount of money. So you see, the application that we should be looking at is not how you can just find something, or maybe you can even carry your camera and go to somebody's house and snap somebody's house and run and go and mint on Polygon.
If I catch
you. No, the day the person that owns that house will catch you. Do you understand? You will be in for it. Do you understand? So look more at solving problems. How can you solve problems with the technology, for goodness sake? You know, it's not about, you know, how you can get issue token and get someone to pump it and tell everybody, if you don't buy now, you'll cry tomorrow. And they'll buy. And next week, they'll start crying. You know, look at solving problems. Do you understand me? And that's the mentality that we should have as Africans. Don't join some of these Asians or some of these guys in the Far East, you know, who are utilizing blockchain to, like, you know, fleet people. That shouldn't be the model that you should copy. We have many problems that you can solve in Africa that put money in your pocket using this tech. And I want to see as many of us creating these solutions, these values, ahead of the monies. And you will see them because the money will be too much for you to even account for. I hope that makes sense to you guys.
All right. Thank you. Okay, we're running out of time.
That's a splendid one from Chimeze. I say this. She started by defining what NFTs are, but I think that we take it for granted what that definition really means. Digital representation of value. Digital representation of value. It presupposes that there is value that you are trying to protect using blockchain security system or ownership system. So the focus shouldn't be on the NFT itself. The focus should be on the value that the NFT is securing. Now, we have made nonsense of that value. Someone takes a picture or draws something anywhere and then expects Senator to buy. Senator, you're not encouraging me. What's happening? You're not buying. You are the CBAM president. You're not buying. And you're talking about blockchain.
Do it for the ecosystem.
Why should I buy? I do not see value in what you have tokenized. If you were Da Vinci and you tokenize your stuff, perhaps I'll see value if it's art. You know? So let's focus on value. And value can be anything. It's not necessarily art or collectibles. Let's remember, there's a member of CBAN right now who is helping universities tokenize their transcripts or certificates using NFT. That's value. We have Agberos in Lagos selling fake tickets in bus or in our transport system. Let's see solutions in that area. Tokenize tickets. So why are we all chasing that grandma, that grandma's picture on the space? There's so much value we can tokenize. Thank you.
All right. So yeah, thank you very much. And I guess this has been. Please clap, 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 clap. So yeah, this has been an interesting one. And like we've all heard, if you're playing in any industry, watch out for the regulator that's supposed to be in charge of that industry. But that's a conversation for another day, because I just thought about logistics and NIPOST, but let's not go there. But for young people building stuff here in the blockchain space and Web3 space, Yomi, do you have anything for them, like how to navigate all these regulations and all of that as an active player?
Okay, so if you're trying to like work in the blockchain space, I think one of the first things that you learn quickly is that there's need for community. You have to have like a strong community around you that you can look to for support as well as guidance, and then you can always like grow together. Because that's like one of like the major tenets of like the blockchain. It's all about consensus, and having a community would go a long way to help you to grow.
All right. Thank you very much. So with that, we come to the end of this session. I hope you had fun. I hope you learned a lot. And thank you very much, my distinguished panelists. And yeah, thanks for just taking all the work from me. That's awesome.
Thank you for listening. Please like, share, and subscribe. I'd also like to know how you feel about today's episode. Please send your comments and feedback to bolu@techpoint.africa.